everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Jesse Zink, and I'm the director of the Cambridge Center for Christianity Worldwide, and we're very pleased to welcome you all here this afternoon. The Cambridge Center for Christianity Worldwide is a new-ish name for what used to be called the Henry Martin Center, funded by the Henry Martin Trust, and that name reminds us of the long history that and connection that Cambridge has had with international mission and the sending of people from Cambridge around the world. Henry Martin, of course, went on to be a chaplain for the British East India Company. After being a fellow at St. John's, he was mentored by Charles Simeon, one of the founders of CMS. And we are here today to remember, learn more about, and celebrate the contributions of some other members of the Cambridge University community who have similarly been sent around the world. We are here to remember and think about the Cambridge 70, and we're very pleased to welcome not only many members of the Cambridge 70 here with us today, but also the Reverend Dr. Ian Randall, who in addition to many other things in his life is a research associate of the CCCW, who has been working hard for some time on a project about the Cambridge 70. We'll hear a small portion of it in this afternoon's seminar, and then downstairs after this seminar, we'll launch an occasional paper from the CCCW with lots more of the fruits of Ian's research in that. This seminar this afternoon is the culmination, maybe not the culmination, but the next stage in a long process of research sponsored by the CCCW. And before we hand it over to Ian, I want to introduce Emma Wildwood of the Divinity Faculty and of CCCW to tell us more about how we've come to be at this stage and to introduce Ian as well. So, Emma.
Well, thank you very much. I thought it might be instructive to learn that this isn't just a seminar when we've invited somebody to come along, but it has been a process, as Jesse said, and that we're at a pivotal point, but hopefully a point at which further research may be done. We started this research with what we called a witness seminar, which became three witness seminars, and John Wheatley Price and Keith Ranger and Basil and Shirley Scott were all part of that witness seminar. When we asked people who had moved from Cambridge in the 1950s out across the globe to work in Christian mission, what that meant. And for me, those seminars were extremely instructive because we learned from them a great deal about their lives, about their thought, about places that they had been around the world and encounters. But we also learned about a changing understanding of Christian mission. And people who went out with the Cambridge 70 were among others who were moving from an imperial age, if you like, into an age of nationalism and independence across the globe. And when they, as they worked, they saw that in their own work and in their own lives. And what I found fascinating was the way that members of the Cambridge 70 have reflected on mission and been part of the change in missionary thinking and in the change in the way that we understand Christianity worldwide. So in changing the name of the centre and in reflecting a little bit on the past of the Henry Martin Trust and the Henry Martin Hall, we followed a picture of the way in which mission thinking has also changed. As a result of the work that Ian has done and the result of the seminars that have taken place, we now have more archive material. We have a sound archive as well as documentation. And it was a particular pleasure today to receive Keith and Catherine Ranger's journals and diaries of their time in Malaysia and their work as evangelists there into the centre's archives for other people to continue this kind of reflection. It's been a particular pleasure to work with Ian on this project, or at least to support the work that he has been doing. It's been a research associate of the centre. Ian has is a church historian and a Baptist minister. For many years he worked at Spurgeon's College and then at the International Baptist College in Prague. He has worked as a pastor in the Cambridge area and continues to work at Adam Brooks as chaplain, as well as pursuing a variety of historical projects that include evangelicalism, missionary history and Baptist history. So Ian, it's a great pleasure. We're really looking forward to hearing what you have to say on Women of the Cambridge 70 and to launching your occasional paper later on. Thank you.
Well,
start talking.
Okay. Writing the paper is nothing, it's the PowerPoints that are the real challenge. And I'm very grateful to a good friend of mine, Peter Conlon, for his help with the PowerPoints. I'm very grateful for this opportunity to share and to have members of the Cambridge 70 here. Of course, nothing that I present today would have been possible but for the Cambridge 70 sending me so willingly their experiences. And I've obviously drawn from a lot of archive material. In 1949, John Certain, who was the president of the Cambridge Intercollegiate Christian Union, which I'll refer to as KICU from now on, told the union's members, "We need some of the fire and recklessness of earlier days, the abandoned service of Henry Martin and the enthusiasm of C.T. Studd. May we," he said, "in our generation, be ready to do anything or go anywhere for our master." At this point, KICU was preparing for a mission to the university, and I just want to say a few words about the history of commitment to mission by evangelical students at Cambridge University. This is by way of background. Henry Martin clearly was an inspirational figure, and David Livingstone made his historic plea for Africa at the Senate House in Cambridge in 1857. And a year later, a Cambridge University Church Missionary Union was formed, closely linked with the Church Missionary Society. John Barton, who was a student at Christ College, was the first secretary of this organisation. And the CMU, along with local mission by Cambridge students and a daily prayer meeting, led to the formation of KICU in 1877. And the aims of this union included the advancement of Christ's kingdom in the university and wider service. And in the same year as KICU was formed, John Barton became the vicar of Holy Trinity Church. He had been a missionary in India. He was a friend of Hanley Moule, the first principal of Ridley Hall, which will appear again in our paper. And a pattern was established in this early period of KICU Bible readings in the university on Saturday evenings and evangelistic sermons on Sunday evenings in Holy Trinity. And under the leadership of Barton, the Henry Martin Trust was formed in 1881. So this is a direct link to what goes on today. The Trust built the Henry Martin Hall as a meeting place for promoting mission and established a library. John Pollock, who's written about some of this history, viewed the Henry Martin Hall as one of the ugliest buildings in Cambridge, but nevertheless honoured for its associations. The 1880s also saw a group associated with KICU, the Cambridge Seven, the famous Cambridge Seven, volunteering as missionaries to China. And this group included C.T. Studd, a nationally known cricketer. They went with Hudson Taylor's interdenominational China Inland Mission, which will come up again also. The early 20th century was a period which saw the evangelical movement struggling in certain ways, and yet there was certain growth as well. In 1920, there was a mission to Cambridge University in which the main Christian societies participated, and Charles Raven, who was the Dean of Emmanuel College, noted that KICU did most in this period to call for prayer for mission in the university, to circulate prayer slips, and 30,000, quite remarkable, prayer slips were sent around the world at the time of this mission. Raven estimated that half the university attended mission meetings. And in the week following this mission in 1920, as a result of conversions that had taken place, there were significant developments at the two Cambridge women's colleges. And as you know, I'm going to concentrate on the women of the Cambridge 70, partly because I've got to limit my subject, and partly because there's been a theme in CCCW seminars on the theme of women in mission. So 1920, six women from Newnham College, three from Girton, met in the Henry Martin Library and decided to form the Cambridge Women's International Collegiate Christian Intercollegiate Christian Union on a similar basis to KICU. And the president and secretary of this new group, the women's group, had in fact committed their lives to Christ at the mission the week previously. So they were moving rather rapidly. Mission continued to be taken seriously by KICU, but there seems to have been much less interest in the late 1940s, and I'm leading up now to my period, late 1940s among KICU members, less interest in international mission. Indeed, Basil Atkinson, the under-librarian of Cambridge University Library and a New Testament Greek scholar who was a long-term supporter of KICU, saw the missionary interest of the Union. He was always very forthright. He saw the missionary interest as pitifully low, with a deplorable lack of missionary vision. Oliver Barclay, writing in 1977 as General Secretary of the Inter-Varsity Fellowship, which was the umbrella body of the Christian Unions, suggested with more restraint than Basil Atkinson that in the period preceding the 1950s, missionary interest within KICU was generally at a rather low ebb. However, this was to change. On the 1st of December 1954, the Executive Committee of KICU discussed the vision for 70 KICU members pledged to serve abroad and formed into a group. In early 1956, the executive referred to, at that stage, 60 members of this group, the Cambridge 70, and linked this with a missionary call of 1955. Now, looking particularly at the women in this group, it's significant to me that they amounted to a quarter of the total. So we need to put this in the context of the fact that at that time in the university only 10% of the students were women, and this was reflected generally in KICU as well. So we have something, of a subversive movement here to enable these women to take up the role in the way in which they did. So in this paper, I'm going to examine the process of spiritual formation that influenced these women to go overseas, and then to look briefly at the work that they did overseas, and then their reflections after they returned. So some words more about the 70, and some words of explanation. So the context in which the Cambridge 70 was mentioned in 1954 was a plan which the missionary secretary of KICU, John Wheatley Price, who happens to be the closest person in the audience to me at the moment, the plan that he had for a missionary weekend and a missionary exhibition. The theme for the weekend was to be the opportunity today. In explaining this to fellow members on the KICU executive, John said that he had given much consideration to the idea of making the challenge and focus of the weekend a Cambridge 70. The committee were asked to pray about the proposal. John, who was at Emmanuel College and read natural sciences, had gone to a KICU missionary breakfast in his first year to hear a talk with the rather dry title, The Missionary Traditions of the Christian Union. The talk was by Basil Atkinson, who stated that at the turn of the century, KICU had 100 members and 40 of those had gone overseas in mission. Now, there were 400 KICU members, with meetings in Holy Trinity Church attracting 600 students. Yet Atkinson knew of only 16 KICU members who were going overseas in mission. John Wheatley Price had an uncomfortable thought, as he put it, that God was asking 70 to serve overseas. He was not conscious at that time that, in fact, it was 70 years since the Cambridge 7 went overseas. There were some concerns, as this was shared, that this could be a stunt, this idea of 70, but gradually all those who thought and prayed about it affirmed this vision. And there is John Wheatley Price. And a missionary report. A missionary report to kick you care of Basil Atkinson. John was succeeded as missionary secretary of KQ by Richard Bewes, later vicar of All Souls, Langham Place, London, who continued the momentum. Margaret Gilbert, a Girton student who read maths, was secretary of the Cambridge Volunteer Union, which encouraged mission and was very involved in the missionary exhibition, as was another Girton student, Shirley Wiltshire. Shirley and Basil are here. The exhibition was held in the Round Church Hall in Cambridge and included the slogan, 70 years ago, by now this was being recognised, 70 years ago, God sent the Cambridge Seven, pray that 70 years later, he will send 70. The gospel narrative of sending out of the 70 was also part of the background. Emphasis was placed on missionary prayer groups, which many KQ members were attending, which took in various parts of the world, and about 4,000 bookmarkers on the 70 vision were printed and sent out to former KQ students, to missionary societies, and to other bodies. By 1958, when Richard Bewes wrote a report, 66 members of KQ had announced their intention of serving overseas in full-time missionary work. And as I said, a quarter of these were women. That proportion remains as the numbers gradually increased beyond 70. And this group kept in touch. So what we have is letters that were shared all through these years between the members for fellowship and prayer. 30 years on from this time, John conducted a survey of those who had gone overseas. And in this survey, the Cambridge colleges were identified from which they came, 9 from Jesus College at that time. It was noted 9 from Fitzwilliam, 8 from Girton, 7 from Emmanuel, 6 from Homerton, with other colleges having smaller numbers. The main subjects that were studied by these students, natural sciences, the number 1, 16. Secondly, maths, 10. History, 9. Classics, 7. Medicine, 4. I find the predominance of science very interesting, considering the myth that there is of the conflict between science and religion. The total number of countries to which they went amounted to almost 50. In terms of continents, Africa had most, not surprising, reflecting the strong interest in Africa dating from the colonial period. So we have 12 in Uganda, 12 in Nigeria, 8 in Kenya, 6 in Ghana, etc. The Indian subcontinent, also important, 6 in India, 3 in Pakistan. The average length of service may, in terms of a whole sense of career mission, may surprise you, 12.36 years was the average length. Perhaps less than you would have imagined, but nevertheless, I think you'll see the significance of that as I go on. Wide range of missionary societies, 18 in all. 17 of the 70 went with the CMS, the Church Missionary Society. 8 with the Church the China Inland Mission, later OMF, the Overseas Missionary Fellowship. 6 with the Rwanda Mission, which was under the umbrella of CMS. And 6 with the Wycliffe Bible Translators. Then smaller numbers with interdenominational societies such as Scripture Union, Sudan United Mission, etc. 24 of these became Anglican clergymen, at that time a calling open only to men. Of these, 17 went to Ridley Hall. Others, doctors, nurses, lecturers, teachers, lawyers, and accountants. So, question, what influenced the women who went overseas? Their experiences in KQ were clearly an important factor. Anne Edwards, a student at Homerton, who subsequently went to Indonesia, wrote later of the privilege of being part of KQ. She appreciated the way in which she learned there the basic tenets of faith in Christ. She was challenged about the reality of faith and willingness for Christ to be Lord of all. For several, it was through KQ that they came to personal faith. Shirley Wiltshire, later married Basil, was at Girton reading history, was one of the first members of the 70 to go overseas. I think perhaps the first, actually. But, She went, she says, to a churchy school, thought of herself as a Christian before coming up to Cambridge. It was meeting members of KQ in the college, she says, which showed me a different sort of Christian faith, a personal relationship with the Lord, and I realized this was the right way. The first two fresher sermons she heard were crucial, and she made a public commitment in Holy Trinity Church on the 17th of October, 1954, one which has set the course of my life ever since. During a vacation at home on her own in a quiet time, a clear conviction came that she was to go to India. Another of the 70, Jewel Story, who was to go to Alaska later, came to commitment to Christ through Newnham College Bible Studies. Others had made a commitment before Cambridge, but the KQ environment had a decisive impact. Margaret Gilbert, another Girton student, felt a deep sense of call after hearing a KQ speaker at Girton speaking very simply about her work in a school in Pakistan. Margaret was already active in areas of interest and mission, but this deepened her sense of call. Juliet Israel, who was at Girton also reading natural sciences, had made a commitment to Christ before she got to Cambridge and was looking for a Christian group, she said. But her call came when she saw a text which was inscribed, that's the whole group, but that's the same as you'll see later. So for Juliet, she was in the Henry Martin Hall. She was looking at a text on the wall which is inscribed with these words: "How shall they hear without a preacher?" The walls had boards with names of missionaries and texts. And for Juliet, this was a turning point. She began work as a teacher and served in education in Nigeria. And part of the environment which helped this within the Henry Martin Hall was the daily prayer meeting. And I've gone through volumes of the daily prayer meeting and been quite struck by the number of people who were part of the 70 who led the daily prayer meeting in the Henry Martin Hall. So the students at Girton formed part of a wider group of women who were part of KQ, and there was a focus in the Women's Committee of KQ on the activities of women and their views within the wider Christian Union. I just find one reference to a talk that was given in KQ on love and marriage. And women noted that the problem seemed to have been dealt with almost entirely from the male point of view. So the women didn't want things just to be done without their injection of comment. Women were represented on the General Committee of KQ in this period, but not until 1957 were they on the smaller Executive Committee. Around the time when the Cambridge 70 call was presented, Margaret Gilbert was actually lobbying for women to be represented on the KQ executive. And in that period, the minutes of the executive, which I've gone through, they're in the Cambridge University Library, show that the executive group, was not convinced of the scriptural basis for women to have this leadership role. There was also reference in the minutes to women coming to university being younger and often new Christians.